From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This flu season is hitting California hard. According to recent data from the State Department of Public Health, over 20% of flu tests are coming up positive, and hundreds of Californians have died so far from the virus. This also comes as other respiratory viruses like RSV and COVID continue to spread. And outbreaks of measles are popping up across the country, including most recently in Los Angeles. Joining us to give us the latest on the flu and other infectious diseases is Dr. Dean Blomberg. He is the Chief of Infectious Pediatric Diseases at UC Davis Health. Welcome back to Insight.
Yeah. Hi, Vicky. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. You know, this season over the winter, just from having conversations with people, it seems like the flu this go around is just really rough. How severe has it been from what you're handling?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, we've had a relatively mild COVID winter, but it's influenza that far and away has been more severe this year. We've seen so many cases of influenza, a lot of cases hospitalized, and unfortunately, as you mentioned, some deaths.
Given that this year's flu season, I believe it's been called one of the deadliest in years, why is this happening? What's up with that?
Well, what we're seeing are two flu strains that are predominantly being circulated now. Both of them are influenza A. One is the H1N1. That has a pretty good match with the vaccine, but the H3N2 is not a very good match. And so we're seeing a lot of breakthrough cases with the H3N2. And so we're seeing a lot of influenza. You know, fortunately, it appears that cases are peaking or may have peaked last week.
Okay. And then historically, flu cases usually peak around this time, right?
Yeah, they usually peak sometime between December and February. February is the most common month that we see the peak. And then they linger on. Later on in the season, we do expect to see an uptick in influenza B cases. They typically occur later in the season. Mm.
So would it be worth it if someone didn't get their flu shot to get one now?
Yeah, since there are three strains that typically circulate every year, even if you've had influenza or even if you've dodged influenza A, it's still worthwhile to be protected against what we expect to be with influenza B coming on. So yes, it's always good to be vaccinated.
What are the challenges when it comes to getting the flu shot, nailing down the right vaccine, given that there are multiple strains that are moving around?
Well, the strains evolve over time. And so what we do every year in trying to predict which strains should be included in the vaccine is we look to the southern hemisphere, seeing what strains are circulating in the summer, our summer, which is their winter, and then trying to incorporate those into the vaccine. But these, you know, these decisions have to be made early on, and those discussions are just starting now with WHO. And unfortunately, some of the FDA discussions regarding that have been canceled.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Given that nearly 1,000 people in the state have died so far from the flu, I mean, we do have the flu every year. People catch it. However, when talking with people just either at work or, you know, with friends or family, it seems like when they do come down with the flu this time of year that it felt worse than years past. Mm-hmm. So even if you're not hospitalized, is it more severe this time around just for an individual case?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any increase in severity. It's just the total number of cases are up this year compared to previous years. But yeah, it's not good to have flu. I mean, you know, obviously we don't want people to die or even have severe disease and be in the hospital. But if you've had influenza, it feels terrible for a few days. And so it's very disruptive to people's lives.
There are antiviral drugs, of course, like Tamiflu. Are those effective?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of those. If you give them early enough in the illness, you can decrease the severity of illness, you can decrease risk of hospitalization, and you get better faster. And even though it might seem that much, if you get better faster a day or two earlier by taking antivirals, that could be significant in your life, because it's just no fun being miserable with all the raging symptoms of influenza, including the body aches and high fevers.
And there are other respiratory viruses circulating like RSV and COVID. Someone could actually potentially get more than one virus, right?
Yeah, co-infections do occur with these viruses. And if you do get a co-infection, it's worse than getting just one at a time. So it's obviously better to have no infections. But if you do have one, it's better than having two or three at a time.
Right. Given that you're also the chair of pediatric infectious diseases, how is it affecting children and younger people?
Well, we're certainly seeing cases in children. We're seeing a lot of cases, and some cases, unfortunately, have had to be admitted to the hospital. In the U.S. as a whole, there's been almost 100 pediatric deaths so far this year. So it's been a really bad year for influenza for children. And, you know, of those pediatric deaths, typically half of those children have been previously healthy with no underlying conditions. So it's not just dangerous for those who are immunocompromised or who have risk factors. You know, for any kid, it can be serious.
What do current vaccination rates look like for this season?
Yeah, I don't have any information on this season's vaccination rates. We'll probably get that later in the year in July or August. But typically, the rates have remained stagnant over the past several years. About 50% of kids and adults every year have been vaccinated, and we really haven't been able to move the needle on that.
Yeah. You mentioned the FDA meetings that have been canceled. I mean, I believe it was not only, it was two vaccine meetings from the CDC and the FDA. So both of those agencies, of course, fall under the Department of Health and Human Services that is led by Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., an appointee of President Trump's, who has long been called a vaccine skeptic. How will this change in administration impact the development of vaccines for future flu seasons and other respiratory viruses?
Yeah, I think what's most important when it comes to public health is clear and consistent messaging on vaccines. And that's something that we've seen this administration so far. Really, they haven't had that. The other thing that we need is really transparency in terms of data. And a lot of the websites that clinicians like me rely on, sometimes they've been down and sometimes they've been changed. You know, in the past, we really looked to the CDC to give us the numbers, to let us know what the trends are. And this helps us. It helps us predict what's going to happen in the future. But it also helps us on a day-to-day basis when we're taking care of patients in terms of weighing what tests to run or what treatments to give, especially for empiric treatment.
Yeah. How long does it take to develop an effective vaccine against a flu strain?
You know, it takes a few months for the manufacturers to test it and to get the manufacturing process up and running. It's a little bit slow with influenza vaccines compared to COVID vaccines, for example. The mRNA platform is really dynamic and really flexible in terms of incorporating new strains. But the majority of flu vaccines are still manufactured the old-fashioned way, and that's in an egg-based system. And so it takes a while to adapt the virus to that egg-based system and then to make sure that the quality and the potency are appropriate for those vaccines.
When it comes to the flu and figuring out what strain to develop a vaccine for, do you look elsewhere, other countries in the world, or maybe the Southern Hemisphere to get a better idea of how to prepare?
Yeah, absolutely. We look all over the world to see which strains are trending. And so it's not just the strain that we've seen most commonly, but the trends are most important, too, to see which ones are up and coming. And really then to try to predict why that's happening. Is this just a local phenomena, or are these strains going to be the ones that we do expect to see? And generally, you know, the people who make these decisions have been generally pretty successful. You know, there are some misses, but, you know, there's a lot more hits than misses.
Of course, this is a time of year where, I mean, we're starting to get longer days of sunshine going outside. Mm-hmm. But of course, during the winter, we're congregating more indoors. That allows for these illnesses and bugs and viruses to circulate and actually infect people more than, you know, being outside. When it comes to RSV and COVID-19 at the same time during flu season, what are those cases looking like compared to flu?
You know, this has been the mildest COVID winter season that we've had since the pandemic started. So that's fortunate. And presumably that's because we haven't seen any new variants, any new threatening variants that have developed. And in addition, now we have a really good level of population immunity. So when people do get COVID, it's less likely to be severe. And RSV peaked relatively early this year and appears to be on the downswing. So fortunately, we're not dealing with multiple viruses peaking at the same time. It's really influenza right now is the main one.
Do you think that we may have alternating years of having a stronger COVID season versus a flu season?
You know, if there's one thing I can predict, it's that I can't predict what's going to happen next flu season. It's every flu season is so unique. And with COVID, it's been very difficult to predict also.
I'm also curious about the messaging of getting vaccinated. Do you think it's sticking? It's effective currently as it stands?
Well, I think with influenza, you know, there generally has been more simplified messaging for that. But unfortunately, since there are breakthrough illnesses with influenza, some people just don't believe in the vaccine. Now, those breakthrough illnesses are milder than would occur if somebody wasn't vaccinated. So there's still a benefit to being vaccinated, even if you get influenza. It's going to be a shorter duration of illness. You're less likely to have complications. With COVID, I think the messaging on vaccine has been pretty complicated with the multiple doses per year. Nobody wants that. So I think we're moving towards a yearly dose of COVID vaccine for most people in the fall, when we do expect COVID to turn into a more seasonal disease.
Yeah. As we wind this conversation down, I also wanted to touch on the fact that there have been outbreaks of measles across the country. There was even a recent exposure warning at LAX a few days ago. What are you watching out for?
Well, measles is one of the most infectious diseases known to humans. And so really, we need a high population of immunity to prevent community transmission. So measles really is the canary in the coal mine in terms of vaccine-preventable diseases. And with the increase in vaccine hesitancy that we have seen over the past few years impacted by the pandemic, even a small lowering of vaccination rates can lead to community transmission. So I'm concerned about the ongoing transmission that we're hearing about in Texas and New Mexico, these exposures in California. I'm hoping there are no or few secondary cases, but it's possible that we're going to see an increase in measles cases, and especially with summer coming up, with people traveling more, traveling to other areas of the world where there's higher rates of measles, we could expect to see increased imported cases and exposures.
I mean, I think of an area like LAX, you know, and how much traffic moves through there and how many passengers. And there aren't really borders when it comes to infectious diseases. Is it just inevitable when it comes to measles, given how highly contagious it is, that it is going to move around?
Yeah, I mean, that's the danger. The problem with measles is that you don't even have to have person-to-person contact to get infected. The virus remains suspended in the air for up to 2 hours after somebody leaves the room. And you can imagine in a terminal at LAX, the room is really big. And so you can get so many exposures, and then those people can be dispersed all over the place, either via another flight or even if they reach their destination in LA, you know, they could go to many communities, and any kind of secondary cases could lead to many additional exposures.
Dr. Blumberg, thank you for the time.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Dean Blumberg is the chief of infectious pediatric diseases at UC Davis Health, and we've been talking about the current flu season in California, as well as other infectious diseases like RSV, COVID, and measles. Up next, the Calder Fire nearly destroyed the town of Grizzly Flats, but nearly 4 years later, residents are still dealing with wildfire hazards like burned trees, which could fall at any time. We'll learn about the challenges posed by this type of debris and why it's complicated to clean up. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.